Hello everyone, my name is Reid Maximo. I'm here to talk, if you're here for the session on Link Security, then you're in the right place. If not, I advise you to check to see your calendar, make sure that you're at the right location. I'm going to be covering Link Server 2010 security, some of the best practices. Hope you enjoyed your lunch so far. Hopefully I won't put you to sleep. The agenda here is going to be about examining security protections that Link Server provides, so what comes out of the box. We're going to identify some potential security threats that you may want to look into or that may be an issue for you or not. Then examine, you know, the external user authentication. So this is really particularly in terms of the outside user coming in. And then finally, we'll look at some best practices recommendations that I can offer here. If you have any questions, please make sure to use the mics. If not, I'll be sure to repeat the question. Please hold your questions until towards the end. And then I'll be glad to cover your questions. So security, how much security is enough, right? And the answer to that is, well, it really depends. I mean, if you talk to a security expert, they'd say, put the box off the network and lock it into a vault, and then that will be secure. And so that's their idea of security. Of course, that level of security is not going to be very useful because you can't really do much with it. So obviously, there's going to be a trade-off between how much security you can offer and what the business requirements are of your users. And so you want to look at, you know, what is important to you. Is it important that you allow users from the outside, your employees from the outside, to connect in? Or can you restrict all, you know, full policy and saying, nope, nobody can access your network from the outside. They have to come into the office and they have to connect. So you have to look at those things. And what is it that's important to you? What is it that you need to protect? Are you trying to protect the office? Are you trying to protect the server room? Are you trying to protect data? What is it exactly you're trying to protect? And so you want to identify those things because that will help you determine how you go about protecting it and providing security for those things. And then last but not least, it's also an important issue, is how much are you willing to spend? How much does your IT budget allow you to spend on security matters? And how much your organization is willing to afford in those cases? Some of these products obviously don't, you know, you'll have to pay for them, or you have to spend a lot of time configuring and researching, so you have to take those three elements into account. And from there, you can put together a best practice or a recommendation to your organization in terms of what is your guideline, what is your recommendation towards it. Now, maybe not a lot of you here are security experts or security administrators, but you are IT linked experts or administrators. And so you have to coordinate with your security experts and say, this is what I need from you. I need you to open this firewall, or I need you to set up this configuration. And then they're going to say, why? And you're going to have to come back with an explanation and say, well, these are the reasons why I need you to do this. And so you have a business policy and business process for doing it. So hopefully some of the information here will help you come up with those arguments to talk adequately with your IT administration. So security, it's as strong as your weakest link, right? So you could have everything locked up, the doors barbelled, you got cameras, and you got security guards, you got watchdogs, but if your window's open and they can come through there, then it really defeats the whole purpose, right? So you need to determine where is your weakest link. And so that's what we're going to try to look into. Obviously, each organization, they're going to have a different situation. And so you're going to want to make sure that in your particular situation, you examine all the threats, the possible vectors of attack, and examine which ones are your weakest link. And definitely a recommendation there is to start with your weakest link. So you want to look at the weakest link, protect that. Well, examine even before you decide to protect it. It's like, ask yourself, is it worth our effort protecting? Is it something that we need to protect? Is it something that if it were to go out, we would be losing the corporate jewels of the company, and we definitely need to protect? And how much of a protection are we willing to absorb? You know, what is the risk factor there if it were to escape, or we would lose that information or that data or that piece of equipment? So look at your weakest link and start with that. And then once you got that protected or you've got that examined and decide, okay, this is the decision, it's not that big of a deal, the threshold of pain, if you will, for a hacker or a malicious user to overcome, that is required for that person to overcome to get to your data or your information, is high enough for your satisfaction, then you can move on to the next weakest link, and so on and so forth. And so it's always a process of continuing looking at your weakest link. And sometimes with the introduction of new products, such as Link Server, you have new vectors of attack. And so that may potentially add or introduce new links vulnerability. And so you want to look at new links that may cause problems. So with that, let's look at the internal communication. So Link Server really is a communication product. I mean, if you look in terms of products, there's really, I'd say, at the very minimum, two categories of products. There's ones that dish out information, and it's got a back-end server, and your information is, the data is what you need to protect. And so, you interface with that data either through a web server or some kind of service that allows you access to that data from the back-end database. Now, Link Server is different in the sense that it's a communication product. So, in essence, the data that you're trying to protect is not necessarily what's in the back-end database. It's not really that important, right? Because in a, say, web server, like, for example, let's take PayPal. The data that's stored in that back-end database is valuable, right? And so you want to protect that database. But in the case of a communications system like Link Server, there's not going to be really that data. Data is transient, right? So if I have an IM chat, it's just going to be transient for the duration of the session. If I have I'm on a call, it's going to be transient during that session. Now, of course, if you have archiving, then that data is going to be stored. So then, you know, you want to protect that. But in a communication product, it is a little different. So what you're looking to protect is different than what you would look to protect from a database point of view or a back-end point of view. What you really want to protect is the privacy of the communication. Is it private? Can somebody eavesdrop into that communication? Do I have strong authentication? Is the server, when the user connects to the server, can there be a possibility of a man-in-the-middle attack so that I can spoof that user into thinking that they're talking to the corporate user, but in reality they're talking to a hacker or a malicious entity? And you also want to authenticate properly the users. So if they're connecting from outside, you want to make sure that Joe really is John Doe and not Jane who's connecting in and then having access and can eavesdrop into a meeting and get all the private jewels of the latest technology that's coming out with Windows 8 or Office 2000, the next version of Office. So those are the cases which you want to look into is privacy, strong authentication. And so let's look at that. So in terms of internal access, let's look at the business requirement. Is server-to-server communication strongly authenticated and encrypted? In the case of Link Server, yes, it is. It's there by default. So it requires you to deploy a private certificate server that usually comes out of the box with Active Directory. If you install a domain controller, you'll have that option there. And that's what we usually recommend because you have to renew those certificates. If you try to get certificates from the outside, one, it's expensive. Two, the process is very manual. And so we kind of shy away from that recommendation. So you want to have certificates. And the reason why certificates are used is for server-to-server authentication. So each Link server has a certificate. And so each server will authenticate each other, and that's called MTLS, mutual TLS authentication. And so by doing the strong authentication, you'll have also an encrypted pipe. So all the communication traverses over the network, it's on TLS over port 5061. And there's also a bunch of other ports that are used, but that's the basis there. So you want to use a private certificate authority and issue certificates to all your Link servers. You also want to, and you want to configure your Link servers with server certificates used for authentication and encrypting the communication channel. Is user authentication configurable? Well, yeah. So what kind of authentication does Link support? Well, it supports Kerberos, TLS, DSK, and NTLM. All three of them are supported for internal communication, so that's over the SIP traffic. So when you when you use Link Client and Connect, it will authenticate using one of these three authentication methods. You'll prioritize Kerberos first and then TLS DSK. TLS DSK is a certificate-based authentication method, so it's a soft certificate, not a smart card type of certificate, but it uses a certificate. It's issued by the Link server to the client. It's a self-signed certificate, and so the Link server manages that certificate for the user. It's not issued by the authority, the certificate authority. Link also connects through the web service. So it has a web service, and it connects over HTTPS traffic, and it supports their TLS, DSK, NTLM, and basic authentication. So that's for the internal access. Well, is the media, if you use a media gateway, and this is in the case of Enterprise Voice, if you use a media gateway that does not support TLS over port 5061, well, what can you do? Well, in this situation, what you can do is if the gateway doesn't support authentication, obviously, if all the traffic, all the voice traffic is going from the mediation server to the gateway and that traffic leg is not encrypted, that means anybody internally could eavesdrop on everybody else's communication. You don't really want to do that. That's probably not a good idea. So in those cases, a simple solution is just put set up the mediation server with two NIC network cards and put one network card on a separate physical subnet that is on with the gateway. And that way, it's physically separated and not accessible. So that's an easy solution for you in that case. But if you have the opportunity, certainly try to use a gateway that supports encryption, because it'll be a lot easier that way. In the case of, I don't know how many of you use internal firewalls. Can I see by a raise of hands, you use a lot of internal firewalls? Yeah, there's quite a few of you guys, yeah, a lot. That has been traditionally a bit of a problem, right? Because with all these servers communicating inside, and you have all these internal firewalls, you kind of have to understand what the traffic is so that you can actually punch the holes through your firewalls to allow the traffic to go through. And it's really tough to debug a firewall issue, because what actually happens is it doesn't work, right? And then you're like looking at the traffic, and it's like, yeah, I sent out the packet, but I get nothing back. And it's just silence. And so it kind of takes a trained eye to realize, oh, the lack of traffic coming back or the lack of traffic going out is maybe a sign that there's a firewall issue. And a lot of times we're looking for error or some kind of diagnostic message, and it isn't there. And so you have to kind of realize it's a firewall issue. So that has traditionally been kind of a bit of an issue for a lot of customers, because they try to set up these firewall rules, and it's really complicated, because Link does use a lot of protocols. It uses SIP, it uses HTTPS, it uses PSOM, it uses SRTP, it uses ICE. So there's a lot of traffic going through, and so keeping track of all that can be pretty complicated. So if you have internal firewalls, some recommendations here: refer to the product documentation. There's a lot of good content there. Refer to the server Link server protocol poster. There's a link to it here on this slide. And then also leverage a Link firewall app to help you define the firewall rules. It's an app that I wrote, and I'll give you a quick demo on it as well. So actually, let's talk about the protocol poster. So it's actually version 12 is already available. Now, I put a version number there for a particular reason, is because there's often updates, and I make sure that I keep that thing up to date. I'm basically the custodian of the firewall protocol poster, and I always want to make sure you get the latest and greatest information. I hear a lot of people like it and leverage it, and so I want to make sure that remains a good resource for you. And so version 12 just got updated on the download center last week. Feel free to go download it. I'm already making additional changes so that there is information about mobile clients as well. How many of you have seen this poster? Ooh, wow, great. Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate you downloading. And I appreciate everybody giving me feedback. If I got something wrong, please feel free to let me know. If you think this is not quite right, do send me an email, because I can help you confirm that. And a lot of times, sometimes it happens is I'll forget something, or it's a copy and paste error. And so that's what happens. And so this is actually version, this is 12 or 13, I can't remember. I think this might be a version 13 that's coming out. So this is the latest version I have on my computer. And I put it out there. And you can see it's broken down into the four major workloads. So you see the IAM and presence workload. You'll see the AV and web conferencing workload, the application sharing workload, and enterprise voice workload. The reason I break it down is, well, it helps manage the traffic a little better. So it kind of helps you understand a little bit, because it's kind of a mess. If you look at the enterprise voice workload, that's the most heavy, that's really heavy in terms of a visual aid there. So I help it break it down so that it can help you if you're running into an issue like an IAM issue. Then you can just refer to the IAM presence workload and say, okay, what is all the traffic that's related to just IAM presence? And then what's the traffic related only to application sharing? Because, you know, depending on the CALs that you use and the services that you need, you may want to have, you may want to just refer to certain ones as opposed to saying, give me a poster with all the traffic. And then you're looking for traffic that is not relevant to you, but you're still looking for it because it was on the poster. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So I hope that helps there. And then you'll see here at the bottom is a certificate requirement. So I mentioned about the certificates. So I try to distill it down to as simple as possible. So if for example, the FKDN is, and it's obviously hard for you to read here, even for me, but if it's got a specific FKDN, then I specify based off of that FKDN, what are the certificate requirements for the subject name and the subject alternate name in there. And then on the bottom left, you see the DNS configuration. There's obviously quite a bit of configuration that needs to happen on the DNS side, and so you can refer to that, and so that kind of helps with everything on that. Maybe with a raise of hand, do you guys like the poster, or you hate it? I get it. All right. So work is worthwhile then. Great. Thanks. And if you do hate it, just let me know. I'll be glad to fix it, or maybe create another poster for you. All right, so let's look at the link server topology here. So, you know, in a topology where you have maybe Exchange and persistent chat or group chat, monitoring, a branch office, you know, multiple pools, that can get pretty complicated. You got a lot of different server roles out here. You know, even if you want to do XMPP gateway, you know, interop, then you'll have an XMPP gateway. So you see you got reverse proxy, edge server on the perimeter. You got the director, Exchange, front end, AV conferencing server. You obviously have Active Directory, and then maybe also a mediation server if you have enterprise voice. So that can get pretty complicated in terms of traffic, right? It's particularly when you have internal firewalls and you're trying to set it all up. So that just makes it really hard. So what are some of the options here to help you? And I want to make sure, and I've gotten some feedback saying, hey, this is really tough. We had to use spreadsheets and like, consultants come up to me and say, yeah, I built a spreadsheet out of your poster, and here's all the list. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty complicated. I'm glad you did it, not me, because that would have been a lot of work for me to do. So let me show you a quick app that I developed. And it'll be out shortly. And you can find it. Did I not get it? Oops. Wrong box. And this is actually based off of a spreadsheet that Thomas Binder and Brian Nice actually created. And they did a good job of trying to document all of that in here. And so this is just a Windows app. If there's a lot of, you know, enthusiasm around it, I'll definitely make a Windows 8 version of it and maybe even a web version like a Silverlight option. And basically, when you look at the... wrong one here. When you look at a topology... And I'll go back one slide here. It gets really complicated, but you can really break it down into server-to-server communication, right? So it's just you just take pairwise. You break this whole mess up into, you know, it's basically a divide-and-conquer approach. You just take two servers at a time and you say, okay, what is the traffic between those two servers? And then you take the next two servers and say, okay, what's the traffic between those two servers? And then you can basically build out your rule that way. And so that's what this app is here to help you with. So you have the legends at the top here, and then you got a source port and a destination. So these are server roles. And so you can pick one. For example, I'll take the front-end server here on the left-hand side as my source, and then maybe I'll take another front-end pool here. And then you can see all the ports and protocols that are used. So green stands for SIP traffic. Black is just, you know, SMB, just regular traffic that's unrelated. So in this case, it's DCOM over TCP on port 135. And then you see all the different traffics that are going through. You got 5061, you got 5062, 8404, 50 and 80. And then that doesn't really tell you a whole lot. It's like, what are these ports used for? Well, here at the bottom in the grid, you can see that 5061 is for SIP signaling, and it's encrypted. And then you can see that 135 is used for DCOM-based operations, such as moving users, user replication, synchronization, you know, address book synchronization and all that. Is it configurable? No, it's not configurable. And there is even a link to the documentation there. Port 5062, we'd be wondering, well, what is that for? Well, that's used for incoming SIP requests for instant messaging conferences. So now you know, you get a bit of an idea. So it gives you a little bit of of color in terms of what these ports are for. And so instead of having this big old mess of a grid, this helps you define, you know, what are all the ports on a pairwise basis. And then you'll see over here, for example, front-end pool with the AV conferencing server co-located. See, there's only one possible client it can talk to. So that's just the client over here. So what I do here is, instead of showing all the list, I'll just show you what servers that particular server role can communicate with. And so that this should be helpful, and you can see how it works. Now, all this is driven back by a spreadsheet. And now let me show you the spreadsheet here, if I can remember where I put it. Link. Should be somewhere here. There we go. Should have loaded up before. So this is where the internal ports requirement is. And you can see your eyes can easily glaze off of that, right? It gets really complicated. But if you were to say, for example, I would, let's take a particular one. Let's pick this one over here. Actually, let's pick. Let's pick this one here. And say I haven't specified a source port, but if I wanted to specify a source port, and I'll just take that as an example. This is the link client to the SBA. I'll save this, close that up, start my app again because it's refreshing and it has to update. So we said the link client to the SBA. And you notice here that the source port is now active. So it's all driven back by the Excel file is the database. It's the content. So the nice thing about this is that if you want to go and create your own rules, you're more than welcome to. You can just update the spreadsheet, add a few things in there, and then it should reflect over here. If you have new icons, then that takes a little bit more work. Yeah, that means that you feel free to contact me, and we'll put that there. One of the things I'm working with is with the Exchange and SharePoint team, maybe they could add their firewalls and ports onto this. So you have one app and you can list all of them there. And so that could be really helpful. And you have links to the documentation here. Anybody interested in using this app maybe with sure hand? Oh, all right. Awesome. Very cool. Well, I hope this is helpful to you. And certainly send me feedback because I'd love to hear from you guys. I've already had this thing vetted by a group of experts, link experts, and they've given me a ton of good feedback. And so I'll continue to enhance it as long as you guys are interested. This is not for me. This is for you guys because I don't really use this stuff. But for you guys, I hear that this could be helpful. So as long as you like it and you want to use it, I'll be more than glad to keep enhancing it. So let's get back to our regular schedule here. So we talked about this, and so I gave you the demo. And now let's talk about protecting the external communication. So this is where really, you know, you guys I'm probably more interested in. It's like, okay, internal communication, we're done. We got it, right? So it's good. But the external communication gets a little more complicated. And I don't know how many of you actually have opened up link to the outside world, basically, you know, to the edge server. Maybe, can I have a show of hands? Let's do the opposite. Can I have a show of hands who only have internal communication, do not have external communication? Okay, that's quite a few of you. That's not a lot of you, right? Most of you have link open to the external. And so this is certainly going to be helpful. And for those of you who don't have it open to the outside world, this may be interesting to you because then you may have some concerns, and that's probably the reason why you haven't opened it up to the internet, because you have some concerns and you want to make sure those, if this maybe helps you address those. So let's look at that. So are you afraid of your firewall ending up looking like this? Probably, right? And that's why the app would help you with that, so it's okay. Especially when you have to go and talk to your security administrator, it's okay. What do you mean? Wait a second, stop. You mean I have to open up all these ports? No. Okay, let's talk about it. Here's the reasons why we have to open these ports, and maybe you can negotiate which ones you have to open and say, okay, well, I'll trade you enterprise voice for application sharing, but you got to open these ports and not those, you know, something like that. I'll let you figure that out. So external access. So does your organization need to communicate with other trusted organizations? If you do, you know, like whether it be Open Federation, you know, basically it's federation with other enterprises, You'll want to obviously deploy an edge pool, which is necessary, and that you'll want to deploy it in your network perimeter behind the firewall. There's multiple ways of several ways of configuring, and I'm not going to go into the details of how the configuration works. I'm just going to stay at a higher level here. There's lots of good documentation on how to configure it, right? But just giving you some strategies is, you know, how you want to plan this. So when you configure federation, there's basically three types. And these are not the correct names here. I just shortened them out because it wouldn't fit in my slide. But you can have federation that's this close. So unless you and I share, you know, certificates and I actually manually configure my edge server to allow your edge server, then nobody gets to connect to my edge server, right? So that's the more secure version of federation. Then you have what I call here is DNS federation. It's like, yeah, you can discover my edge server, but unless I allow your domain, you're not going to be able to connect to me, and you know, that's how it's going to work. So there is still a little bit of manual configuration there. It means that they can discover it. So you know, there's a bit of risk there, right? Because if another customer or partner can discover it, that means a hacker can go and discover it too, and they can start pounding on it if they want to. And then you have the other one, which is basically what used to be called open federation. It's like, hey, as long as you can discover it and I can discover it, we're good to go. We're bros, right? Let's party on. So that's kind of the way there. I mean, it's not like it's completely unsecure. It's not the case. But I'm making it simplifying there. So obviously, with the edge pool, you want to configure public certificates. That's going to be important. And in this case, you're not going to use a private certificate, because if you do, then your partner is going to have to get a copy of your root certificate, because they're not going to trust your root certificate. So it's probably easier to just get a certificate from a public CA, you know, like VeriSign, GoDaddy, you name it. Any of those public certificate authorities will work. You obviously want to configure your external DNS so that the public IP address and FQDN is published to DNS, so they can it's discoverable. And here, by default, again, Link Server requires that all communications remains encrypted. So it's encrypted and it's secured through MPLS. And so it's authenticated and it's private. So that was federation. That was with other organizations that you trust. Now, what about just your own users? Do you want to allow them to be able to connect from home? Or if they're on the road and they're consultants, they want to be able to connect back and communicate. Say, for example, they're a link expert and they're on site at a customer and they say, hey, I need to ask Bob a question because I don't know the answer to this question. Boom, he gets on IM and he can communicate. So do you have that requirement? So if you do, then here are some options for you to do. So you want to deploy an edge pool, again. If you don't have one already deployed because of federation, then you want obviously you need to have that. You need to determine which workloads you want to allow, okay? Is it IM? Is it conferencing? Is it enterprise voice? So you need to determine that, and the poster can help you with that as well as the app here. And if it's just say, I only want to allow IM, great, then you can just configure the necessary ports for it. You don't need to configure the AV conferencing. You don't have to configure the web conferencing, and you certainly don't have to configure all the SRTP ports for that. So it really depends on what you want to allow through to your organization, right? You'll also need a reverse proxy, because Link Client will connect not only to Link Server through SIP, but also through the web traffic, HTTPS traffic. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then are you interoperating with XMPP other providers. Well, you'll also need a XMPP gateway there. There's some articles on how to configure that. And then obviously you'll still need your public certificates in the same way as you did for federation. So you'll have to configure that on the edge server so that your clients will be able to authenticate. Okay, and that will they'll authenticate the server with the server certificate, and it will create the encrypted communication channel. And of course, the configuring the external DNS there. Now, do your users also need to invite external participants to web conferencing? Assuming that you've enabled web conferencing and your organization needs to allow, you know, users, or maybe these are potential clients because you're doing webcasts, or maybe a potential customer or partner, and they don't have corporate credentials, then you want to allow them to join a meeting. So if that's the case, then you want to enable anonymous access to conferences. If not, just disable it. And this is something you do on the edge, right? And so just look at your, look. This is just to give you an idea of what are your options here, right? Then, is defending against denial of service attacks and brute force password attacks a priority? I mean, doing a denial of service attack these days are just, it's so easy, right? It's just kiddies, script kiddies can just totally do this. It's really simple to do it. Unfortunately, it's hard to protect against it because you don't, it's hard to recognize whether it's a legitimate user or if it's not. And so if this is an issue, then there's some solutions out there to help you with that. If it's not an issue, then forget about it, right? It's not that big of a deal. But if this is an issue, then there's some options. You can certainly set up the group policy in Active Directory to block users after a certain number of fail attempts, right? And then lock out the account. The problem there is that it locks out the legitimate user from all access, right? And so they can't access anything that requires any domain authentication. Another option is to actually block and perform the same type of security, the lockout security process at the edge on the network perimeter. And so you could use a security filter that does that protection at the edge pool. And you can use a security web filter on the forefront TMG. And that will provide you that security. So let's actually look at this in action. Okay. I got a video here I'm going to show you by Fabian, and hopefully the audio will work. And he does a good job here of explaining how it all works. So he's showing the domain controller, if the audio is on. Yes?
Protect your corporate users. For this demo, we use three systems. We have a domain controller, a Link Edge server, and a client in the internet, which we are going to use for the attack. For our demo, we have two user accounts. Victim 1 and Victim 2. As you can see, both user accounts are not locked out and the bad password count attribute of both users has a value of 0. We have configured the logout count value for the domain with a value of 5. Now, first we will show you what happens without the security filter. Let's switch to the attack client. In our demo, we use the Link Security Filter and Web Security Filter Denial of Service Attack Validator tool. This tool is an easy application based on the Link UCMI SDK. First, we have to configure the Link Security Filter and Web Security Filter Denial of Service Attack Validator. Let's start the configuration wizard. First, we define the internal NetBIOS domain name and optionally the corresponding UPN suffix. Our internal NetBIOS domain name in the demo is groupdeck, and the corresponding UPN suffix is groupdeck.net. Next, we define the FQDN of the Edge server.
So this is a tool that Fabian built.
FQDN of the Link external web services.
That does a denial of service attack against an Edge server.
Finally, we have to import our list of victims. Now let's start the attack.
So here the attack is against victim one, the user victim one. And he's performing 5 login attempts.
Let's switch over to the domain controller.
And by switching to the domain controller, you can see here that the account will be locked out.
As you can see, our victim user is now locked out. Now we are going to mount the same attack with the security filter enabled. Let's switch over to the Link Edge server. To be sure that your internal domain accounts won't be locked out during a denial of service attack, the value of the security filter lockout count must be configured with a lower value than we use for the domain lockout count. In our demo, we configured a security filter to soft logout a user after 3 bad login attempts. This means that the security filter will block further login attempts after 3 bad login attempts, and therefore the internal account won't be locked out. We will now start the security filter service to protect our Link Edge server.
So So now he's starting the security filter.
Let's check the event log that the security filter is up and running. As you can see, the security filter is now active. Now we will start the attack again, but now against the account victim 2. Before we can start the attack, we must import the victims list, which contains the victim 2 account.
Since victim 1 was already locked out, he's going to use a different account.
Okay, now let's start the attack. As you can see, the Lynx security filter and web security filter denial of service attack validator has already detected that this Lynx edge server is protected by the security filter. Let's switch over to the Lynx edge server. In the event log, you can see that the security filter has blocked further login attempts after the third bad attempt. Let's also check our user account victim 2 on the domain controller. As you can see, the bad password count attribute is not higher than a value of 3 and the account is not locked out. The security filter is a perfect, powerful application to improve your Lynx security. Thank you for watching this demo.
So that just shows, that was a tool that Fabian wrote basically on over a weekend. And he basically just used UCMA and just attacked the user by logging on. And so if the lockout password wasn't available, then obviously you could do a brute force attack on it and just find out what the password is, or lock out the account entirely if you didn't have a security filter like this, for example. So maybe a quick demo on how that would work. I'll just show you really quick here. So hopefully I got the right one, yes. So you'll see here there's a configuration here that I have. It's the domain. You have to specify the domain that the authorized domain, so the domain that you own, because it could be any other domain. What usually happens is when you start with Lynx and Lynx logs in, it'll try to use the login credentials. And so if you're logged in from home and you are on a computer that is not domain joined, then it's going to try to use your credentials that are on the machine. And so those will fail anyways, so there's no point in pointing those out. And then here is specify the lockout count, which is 2, and a lockout period. There's also the option here to disable NTLM entirely. And so what I can do here is I'm going to just put a bogus password and try to log in, and it'll fail. And I will go over here and look at the event logs. I'm going to refresh first. And you can see here at this point that the account has been blocked, because this is actually my second time attempting to log in. I had previously done one login. I want to show you they got locked out. So that's how it works. It installs as part of the Edge server. It's pretty simple to use. And let's move on to... Oh, before I move on, I wanted to show you. This is the actual naming convention for those three types of federations. So you got allow automatic discovery of federated partners, allow discovery, but only grant a higher level of trust to specific domains, and do not allow discovery of federal partners, which would be the close authentication there, close federation. So let's move on to the next here. So, okay, great. So that means I can block user accounts from the outside, but what if I want to restrict users from using any device to log in, right? So you want to be able to say, you can log in, sure, externally, but you got to use your corporate device, which means your corporate-issued laptop. Well, how do you do that? Well, I've had that question in the past, and the solution or the strategy that I came up with offering it to you guys is, well, you can use BitLocker, right? So you can enforce BitLocker because it's a corporate-issued computer, so you can really do anything you want with it. So you can put BitLocker on there. It's got a lot of good value. It encrypts the hard drive. But more importantly, and from my perspective, is it turns your hard drive into a smart card, right? Because if you can't do anything with it unless you put in the password, which is essentially the same thing as with a smart card. You insert the smart card, you have to put in a password. So it essentially turns in your laptop into a smart card. And then you can install the security filter on the edge, and you can block NTLM authentication. Why would you want to block NTLM authentication? Because those credentials, if you don't block NTLM authentication, it means that the user would be able to log in from any device. So the reason why you want to block NTLM authentication in this particular case is to force the user to use the corporate-issued laptop. And the way that works is they have to bring in the laptop to they have to connect at least once into your corporate network. Okay, so they'll authenticate inside your corporate network using Kerberos, NTLM, TLS, DSK. Well, in this case, at least the first time would be the Kerberos or NTLM. And then once they authenticate, they will get a certificate. They'll get that self-signed certificate that would be issued by the Link server. And once they get that self-signed certificate and they move outside the corporate network, like they go home or they go to on-site, then they will authenticate automatically with the self-signed certificate. And so you won't have that username and password on the machine. And one of the things you can do is like, well, they authenticate it once with the username and password, right? So the password is already stored in the credential manager. Yeah, it is, but you could make that password expire. So once they have gotten their certificate, you can expire that password, and that means that the password is no longer good. Even if somebody were to go and steal their computers and extract the username and password from the credential manager, which some of you might have heard, it was a little blog article about that. Okay, so you got in the password, big deal. It's expired. You won't be able to log on with it anyways. And in any case, it requires somebody to be able to get on the computer as a logged on user to be able to access it. So this is a good technique, and I think it's been deployed successfully with certain customers to enforce their users to log in from outside the corporate network using corporate-issued laptops and blocking non-corporate-issued laptops by using this particular strategy. Has anyone tried this or heard about it? No? Okay. Hopefully this will be useful. All right, so another quick demo here about the Link, the security web filter. So the security web filter goes hand-in-hand with the security filter. So the security filter is installed on the Edge server. The security web filter is installed on your Forefront TMG, Threat Management Gateway, which serves as a reverse proxy. Right? So we talked about that when you're outside, Link will connect through the Edge server as well as the reverse proxy. And it will authenticate as well. So even though you may have blocked, enforced lockout counts on the Edge server, if you don't enforce it on your reverse proxy, it kind of defeats the purpose. I mean, it's like you're locking the door, but you didn't lock the window kind of thing. So you want to lock both the window and the door. And so the security web filter here is to provide that level of protection. So it enforces also the lockout count on the reverse proxy. This is still kind of debug output here, but let me show you really quickly what happens. Is you'll see all the output from the reverse proxy in this case. And I want to show you really quick here that you can see the NTLM information coming through. Let me find it. This is all dial in. Here we go. So you can see NTLM authorization coming through. And it's NTLM is a three-handshake authentication process. So you'll see the authorization that comes in, and you got it in Base64 encoded. And then you can see here another one down below here, which is another request. And you can see that with the security web filter, it got blocked. That user got blocked. This is victim one. And it's got a timestamp and the source IP address at which it came from. So let's actually walk through that process. And this time, let's see. Let's go through the dial-in page. So if you're going to allow people to dial into your conferences, then you're going to have this page that they allow. So they're going to be able to authenticate here. And let's just put some bogus password here. And the password was incorrect. And then we'll scroll back down over here. And then we should see that here's victim 2 and the source IP address at which they came from. And the lock account was 1 and the source port over there. And you can see that it was an access denied. So if I try that one again, so it's a little hard to go through this. So here you can see actually this is a certificate request. But here we go. So here you can see it's victim two again, and the lockout count was 2. So if I do it one more time, you can see there was operation failed with an unexpected error. Because this time, the response came directly from the security web filter. It actually blocked it. And you can see right here that the account was blocked. This is victim 2. Because the lockout count was set to... to 2. It's not shown over here. And I can do the same thing from the phone. So we'll actually block it as well from the phone. So if you're deploying the mobility service and you have Link mobile clients, then it'll actually connect through to the edge servers through the HTTP through reverse proxy, not through the edge server. And so the security web filter would also block, would help protect that as well. All right, so let's move back. And so what about like clickable links? So do you need to restrict clickable links? It's often the case that people are just intuitive. They just click really quickly and they don't realize, oops, I just went into the wrong website. And so you can also disable clickable links. And the way to do that is you want to enable the intelligent IAM filter on the edge pool, and that will prevent that from happening. And there's some links to documentation on how to do that. All right, so let's talk about client authentication. What's the process for doing that? Every client is doing it slightly different. You got the link client, you got the web browser, and you got the link mobile clients that connect, right? So understanding a little bit how the authentication works will be valuable to you as you decide, as you try to explain this and communicate with your security administrator so that the behavior is understood when they try to connect or maybe when they troubleshoot because they're not able to log in. So the first one would be, and we're only going to talk about it from the perspective of the external client authentication here. So if you were to look at the link client, the process is basically from the external network, Link will not be able to authenticate using Kerberos because it won't be able to connect to the KDC. So the only two options available there are NTLM and TLS DSK. And if it's the first time that they're logged in and they don't have the certificate, then they're going to authenticate using NTLM because it'll prompt the user for username and password. So it'll attempt to authenticate over SIP to the edge server or through the edge server to your link server. Because the edge server doesn't perform any authentication. So let's make sure we're clear about that. It actually passes through. What the edge server does is it establishes a secure pipe, so a TLS pipe, between your client endpoint and the edge server. And the client actually authenticates the edge server. So there's basically a one-way authentication. The client is authenticating the edge server, verifying, yeah, that's the correct edge server that I'm supposed to connect to. And then the authentication passes through through the edge server to your director or to your pool inside because it requires Active Directory access. So it connects to your Active Directory and verifies the authentication there. Now, the link client will also perform the same type of authentication through your reverse proxy. It'll authenticate using NTLM over HTTPS to your edge server, to your reverse proxy, whether it's Forefront, TMG, or maybe another reverse proxy. And that connection, the authentication process, again, the reverse proxy is not going to do the authentication directly. It's going to go to the link server, and the link server will perform the authentication. Once it's done that and it's able to authenticate, then it will request a certificate via the reverse proxy. And that's your self-signed certificate that we talked about. And I'm going to show you what that certificate request looks like. So if we were to go back over here, you can see that there's this big blob of data here that comes from victim one request. And that's basically the certificate request. It's a binary security token, and it's requested through the HTTPS channel. And once it obtains that certificate, then it no longer needs to use it NTLM to authenticate. It can just use that certificate. And because this is the first time authentication, it's requesting the certificate. But if it already had the certificate, it's obviously not going to request the certificate again. It's already got it. It can perform the authentication, and bam, you're done. Now, there may be you might be asking the questions like, well, what if the certificate's about to expire? Does the user have to re-authenticate using NTLM again, or how does that work? Well, no, you don't actually need to do that. The Link client will, because the certificate is still valid, just prior to, and I don't know exactly the time, time lapse there, but it'll actually go and request the certificate, a renewal of the certificate directly with the Edge server, with the Link server. And so it'll get the certificate again, and then it'll continue using the self-signed certificate. So that's useful there. Okay, so I wanted to show one quick other demo here, and while I'm at it, so I'm going to disable disable NTLM to true. So basically, that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to just block all NTLM authentication here. And that will require me to restart the forefront server because it needs to refresh that information. So while that's doing that, we'll slide back. And I'll show you on my phone that the connection actually gets blocked because it's NTLM authentication. All right, so then that was the authentication process for the Link client. So you can see that it's authenticating twice, essentially, once through the SIP traffic and another time through the web traffic. And then once it's authenticated, it'll go and request a certificate, and once it's got the certificate, it'll be stored. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to show is... Now, unfortunately, my accounts are all locked up. Hopefully, by then, it'll be unlocked, and then I can show you the certificates that get downloaded. Okay. So it looks like the service is back up here. So I'm going to use my phone, and I'm going to use a Link client. And I put in a bogus, I'll put in the correct password, and I'll attempt to sign in. And you can see there's more output that's coming through. So here you can see the request, and it's coming from a Link 2010 client. That's basically the user agent here. Is this the signature that it's a Link mobile client that's connecting? And it's going to attempt a authentication here, an NTLM authentication. And you'll notice here that the request is automatically blocked, right there. NTLM authentication request is blocked. So, and I can't show you here because I don't have a camera, but I can't connect. So that allows you to basically block clients as well, mobile clients, whether it be Android, iPhone, or Windows mobile phone, or iPad. And you can do that. All right, so what about the browser client? So I showed you how the authentication, I was able to try to connect, and then I failed. Well, the browser basically uses basic authentication over HTTPS. So I'll authenticate there, and I actually can even extract at the reverse proxy the password, and that's normal because the traffic is terminated there, the TLS traffic is terminated there. And then the client will store the credentials in the credential manager, just in the same case as the link client. Then also mobile clients. So you got the mobile clients, and everything goes through HTTPS traffic. And in this case, it's different. It's not using basic authentication. It is using NTLM authentication, just like I showed you, because the authentication request got blocked. And so you can see between all three different clients, there's different types of authentication processes. And so understanding how all three of them work will help you define, troubleshoot, and also figure out what type of security practices you want to enable there. All right, so I'm leaving a little bit of time for the end for some questions, but best practices. You know, you want to make sure you keep your security patches up to date. That's just the basic. There's some security patches that came out for Link Server. Make sure you apply them. If you follow Dr. Rez, he actually posted a link, to, a tweet on that just yesterday or today. So make sure you follow them. There's nexthop.info. That's a shorthand URL to the TechNet website where you can go to the community portal, basically, for all things Link. And you know, you can find all kinds of great articles. And these are all technical articles, not marketing articles, on a whole bunch of different topics. You want to know your ports and protocols, right? So having a good understanding of that really, really helps you communicate and understand what the traffic is going, because after all, this is a communication product. And so it's all about communication and traffic. So understand that really well. Leverage the protocol poster. Leverage the firewall app. If you're interested, follow Dr. Rez, or you can follow myself, Rui_Maximo, and I usually will post a link to it. It'll be available sometime this month. And then, you know, configure additional security protections at your edge, whether it be the reverse proxy or the edge server. Make sure that, you know, if some of these issues are a concern to you, there are solutions available for you in that case. And before all of you guys leave, make sure you vote and and put your comments on there. But and then last thing is, tighten external access to your corporate network. So again, it kind of goes back to understanding your ports and protocols, right? So you can tighten it if you understand what's needed there. Got my email address and some information about me. And then before all of you run away, I'm going to throw these slides out there because I've been asked to make sure to do that. You got the Link team blog. The shorthand, like I showed, was the nexthop.info. You got the Link Facebook. Link server blog, Link website, these are all informations that are valuable for you as resources. We want to make sure that you are empowered with the information you need to be successful. And then, of course, you got the standard slides here for TechNet and sharing information, MSDN, that's available. And then is this the slide? So please, yes, please complete an evaluation form on ComNet, and you can enter to win. Fabulous prizes. Who would want that Xbox? It would be great if the Xbox car was available, right? The Project Detroit, but unfortunately not. I just checked it out. So thank you for your time. I hope this was valuable to you. If you have any questions, please come up. I'd be glad to take your new questions. We will have to leave exactly in 16 minutes for the next session. Thank you for your time.